Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I am your host, L. Ariel, and we can be reached at musicjobspodcast.com. That's musicjobs with an S, podcast.com. We are all about talking to the movers and shakers and innovators in the music business today. So all about basically, how did they get their music job? We talk to people, talented individuals from every aspect of the music industry, basically just go over their career trajectories, what decisions they made, what obstacles they faced, what advice do they have for people today looking to get into that field, or for the artist who is looking to promote their brand, expand their career, etc., etc. So just a lot of good nuggets of wisdom. We have 25 episodes up now, so make sure you check them out. We are on all the streaming platforms, Google, iPlay, iTunes, Stitcher, and more. And also on the website is every single one of our episodes. So if you can't find one on the streaming platform, definitely go and look for it on the website. So last week, I had the wonderful pleasure of interviewing Sarah Lieb. She is an incredibly talented singer, and she's performed all over the world, and she's also now an educator, a vocal coach, and she has her own vocal studio in Los Angeles, and she is also the creator, developer of an app called Boxercise, which is a vocal warm-up app, which I just love. I think that is such a great innovation and that wonderful marriage of music and technology, not to mention some passive income. So she talks all about that. She even talks about vocal technique. So if you're a singer or you want to hear more about vocal techniques, et cetera, it's a really great interview to check out. So don't miss that. And my next guest is Joshua DeCaney. He is a percussionist, which means that he can basically play any type of percussion instrument. He is currently teaching at the prestigious Settner School of Music at Syracuse University. He has studied in Brazil and headlined the Batuca International Drum Fest in São Paulo. He's been featured at Jazz at the Lincoln Center. He has collaborated with modern dance artists. He has performed with several orchestras. He's played with Pete Cetera and Aretha Franklin. Yeah, this is one busy guy. Josh is going to walk us through his career, first from Texas to Kentucky to Missouri to Florida and then New York, and how he has been able to have all these incredible experiences and all these amazing opportunities as a teacher and as a professional musician. So get ready for some good chat. But before we do that, here's a featured track from Josh, 808 to 909. Check it out. How'd you get that music job? It's so nice to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I always like to start with my guests about their childhood. I just love to hear about kind of the musical influences from very young. So can you just tell us what kind of household you grew up in terms of music?
Yeah, I was born in Dayton, Ohio. And when I was four, my parents moved down to Houston, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
So growing up, I heard, you know, I was born in 74, so I heard, you know, the tail end of 70s disco into rock and roll and Zeppelin, and was way into Rush. And my dad loved old 50s doo-wop and Motown stuff.
Nice.
I was hearing a lot of that. Within Texas, you know, you go to San Antonio, or there wasn't as many Tejano radio stations back then. But I knew a little bit I'd heard some of the Tejano music. That wasn't really my theme, but I knew it was out there. And I'd definitely heard some of the mariachi bands.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I started in school band. So, in sixth grade, and in school band, you know, we're playing wind ensemble music and marches and sometimes orchestral pieces, then arranged for wind bands, because back then, and even now, they don't really have that many orchestras but they have tons of wind bands. So we would do orchestra reduction sometimes. So I was listening to that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then when I was in high school, marching band was the deal, like that, the deal. Football is huge, and which allows marching band to be huge. And it's nuts. So I was, we were listening to different marching bands and having marching band rehearsals all the time. So I was listening to all kinds of stuff.
That's cool. Can you just tell for our listeners who may not know what Tejano band, like what Tejano music is?
Yeah, Tejano music is like Mexican pop music. A lot of times you hear like an accordion in it, definitely like drums. Sometimes, a lot of times, it's like the old boom, 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 like drum machine type tom-tom sound. But yeah, it's like Mexican pop stuff. If you, probably the biggest artist people might know would be Selena. They made a movie about her. J-Lo was in the movie and stuff. So that was definitely out there. Now when I go home, there's tons more of that on the radio. Probably half the radio stations and a lot of the TV stations now are all in Spanish. So that has really changed the thing. But when I was growing up, you know, this we're talking late 70s, early 80s, that was just starting to get in the ether. Most of it was rock and pop and synth stuff and Duran Duran and all that kind of stuff. So I kind of was all over the place. And then right before I went to college, I went to University of Kentucky. The summer before, maybe two summers before, Modern Drummer magazine put out in their magazine a flexible vinyl record. And on the record, it had rhythms, Afro-Cuban rhythms for drum set. And it had some notation of these rhythms. And that totally blew my mind. And like I had never heard, that was the closest thing to Africa I'd ever heard at that point. And so that totally blew my mind and set me off on a totally other path when I was about 17, 18. And then went to the University of Kentucky, studied with Jim Campbell, studying percussion there. He got me even more into kind of Afro-Cuban rhythms, straight West African rhythms, and then heavy into Brazilian rhythms. We had a steel band. And then concert percussion literature, so solo marimba, vibraphone pieces, solo snare drum, solo timpani, and then multi-percussion is really kind of where I found my way doing multi-percussion, which is just really any combination of different percussion instruments. Like a drum set is really multi-percussion, you know what I mean? It's just different percussion instruments together in a group, so there's all almost infinite numbers of ways you could do that. So that I really kind of found my way with multi-percussion, but I was playing and listening to all kinds of stuff, you know, playing more drum set at home. And then at school was really more reading, concert music. And, yeah, so I was getting up after all kinds of stuff.
Were you self-taught when you were in high school and earlier? Was it all just self-taught by ear?
No, I was very, I didn't understand how good I had it really till I went to Kentucky. And I asked a kid, we were talking about, you know, did you have private lessons? And the kid asked me that. And I said, well, yeah, I've had private lessons every week since sixth grade. I'm like, didn't you? Like, I thought everybody had that. And he was like, no, dude, I was lucky to get, you know, but in our district, again, because it was Texas and in our district in particular, Spring ISD, thank God, was really, really supportive financially of music. I wanted to say the arts, but really was more music than anything, and marching band and that kind of stuff. So part of that, now my parents had, everybody's parents would shell out whatever the going rate was at that time, but you were set up with a teacher, and if you couldn't have the money, they would figure out a way to pay it, but you studied with a private teacher every week. And I did that starting in pretty much in sixth grade. It wasn't, you know, I'm sure there were some weeks off in there, but it was steady and they were on you. So I took to it pretty quick. Nobody else in my family was musical, and something clicked with me when I started playing percussion. It was like, yeah, this is it. I stopped playing soccer. I stopped doing other stuff. I was like, I knew, like, I just want to play these different drums, and I was captivated.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting too, that you didn't sort of go, okay, I'm just gonna, you know, be in a rock band and, you know, kind of stick to a specific genre. It sounds like you really got immersed in all these different, you know, types of percussion and types of beats and types of genres. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was all over.
Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit more about the college experience. Like, what, so you, did you have any sort of goal in mind, or were you just kind of like hungry for knowledge and just trying to learn as much as you could?
Yeah, definitely hungry. And I went to Kentucky to study with the teacher. Like, he could have been in Antarctica and I would have gone to Antarctica.
Nice.
Study with this guy. with him, you know, we were, like I said, furthering what I had gotten into with Afro-Cuban stuff and with, you know, solo percussion, ensemble playing. So for me, my goal was, I knew that that I wanted to be a music teacher, so I got a music education degree.
Mm-hmm.
As much as some of the teachers wanted to change me from that, I knew that I didn't want to be a band director. But even when I was in high school, I was given lessons sometimes to middle school kids.
Oh,
and it
wow!
It seemed very natural, and I kind of understood how to kind of learn what I had learned to show somebody else that.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that I wanted the music ed degree, but I knew at the same time that I didn't being a band director was not my thing. And, mm-hmm. but I wanted to teach somehow, some way. So you were asking kind of what the end goal. And really my main goals, I guess, were just to, I knew I wanted to have a family one day and that I wanted to just keep making good music.
Mm-hmm.
And that just kind of furthered me to keep wanting to play with better players, which has continued now, you know, fast forward over 20 something years later, 25 years later. And I'm still trying to do that. You know, I'm teaching at Syracuse University and I'm playing gigs, and it's just a further continuation of what I started way back. And then in college, it's like, okay, I just want to keep learning more stuff. And right now I'm writing music more and trying to record with people. And I'm mainly an accompanist, you know, as a drummer and a percussionist, which is great. That's generally my role. But mm-hmm. it's really a continuation from those days. And so that was my goal, was, like I said, to have a family. And then just to keep making music. Because after I finished my undergrad at Kentucky, which I took me 4.5 years, and my father said, you got to get some business experience. You got to get some. Because he was a businessman and worked in the oil business, petrochemicals business in Houston for a while. And he was a suit and tie guy, you know, and he'd get up in the morning, go to work. So he's like, man, you're the artist, but you got to get some business experience. And so in that semester, you know, spring semester, I guess that was 97, I did an internship with Yamaha Music Corporation. And that's
oh,
when
cool.
the drum division was, that was the drum division was still in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
So that was another continuation of that. And then from there, did grad school at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, and spent 2 years there. So it just kind of kept going, and I just was kept chasing, wanting to get better, and I didn't really know exactly how to, you know, about the whole thing of how to get gigs and all that kind of stuff. It was just like, I knew I just wanted to keep doing music, but that was the thing, and I liked teaching, and I liked to play.
Mm-hmm. Did you get an MFA in music at Kansas City?
Yeah, I got a master's in performance. Yeah. Yeah, master's in performance.
Yeah, so I was just going to ask, I mean, it sounds like you know, you were pretty focused. I mean, like you said, it was sort of like you kind of had things planned out, you know, with knowing you wanted a family and you wanted to keep performing. And did you feel like, I need to go to the East Coast, I need to go somewhere else, I need to go to Chicago? Like, what was kind of your thinking at that point?
I was just talking about this with somebody the other day, because we have plenty of students up here that are like, I'm going to New York City, I'm going to set the world on fire. And
yeah.
I was just like, I'm like, let's just, what's out there? What's opening up? And, you know, kind of really, where is God leading me? What doors is God opening, and trying to recognize those and be able to make decisions and like, okay, oh, this is where I'm supposed to go. And sometimes that's easy. Sometimes it's really hard to discern, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then of course you find love in there, and that changes everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I met at that time when Kansas City, met my wife. We've been together almost we've been together over 20 years. We met in Kansas City, and she was getting ready to go get her PhD. And I was like, hey, let's go to Austin. When I finished, we got to go to Austin. Austin's the spot. You should go to University of Texas. And nope, couldn't. We went down there, looked at it, couldn't convince her. She was already kind of en route to go to Florida State.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up in Tallahassee, Florida for a couple of years. I would never have planned that. You know, Kansas mm-hmm. City was really good to me. And I was really starting to gig and play with some people there. And it was just really friendly musicians and good musicians. And, but, you know, I fell in love and ended up in Tallahassee. And then she finished school there, got a job at Syracuse, and we've been in Syracuse ever since. So
wow,
that's the thing. You try to, like, I never had it was like a hard thing, like, okay, in this year I'm going to be here and that. It was just keep going. Like, how can I make money doing this? And then when I finally got out of school and moved to Tallahassee, I got a couple part-time gigs teaching at schools. So, like, I taught a steel drum band at a high school in Tallahassee, Florida. Taught a couple marching bands, was playing in the dance department, and, you know, my wife was in school, and we were still under the poverty line, but we didn't have any debt. We were making enough, just enough, where we could, you know, we bought a Gateway computer that was like a huge rack. You'd laugh to see it now. It's like $2,500, you know, installments, that kind of thing. But, you know, so those, love takes you there, places where you'd never... And life just will take you places, and you kind of ride it. So, So when you say if I had it planned, you know, it was I had a soft structure, you know, like this would be great, but I had no idea it would turn out like we are now. So, and now I have two teenage boys on top of everything, you know, like one's starting to drive, he's going to start college soon, and we look back, it's like, holy cow, this has been amazing, super many, many blessings, and it's been good. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. I love that. And it sounds like, yeah, you certainly didn't, like you said, you didn't plan on being in Tallahassee, and yet you were still able to, you know, find teaching jobs, and I'm sure, you know, have a great experience and help a lot of people, you know, with your teaching in Tallahassee and inspiring kids, I'm sure, you know, you made the best of it while you were there, you know?
Well, not only that, it actually was really super transport. Like, that was where I was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And I got to play with, play music for this dancer, Joale Zoller, at Florida State. That totally changed my world completely. She led this camp. I don't even know if they're still doing it. Urban Bush Women was the dance troupe. And I had, you know, I had played some Afro-Cuban music and some African music, but mostly with white people, you know, who were like really secondary to it. And she was really in it and got to play with people from FAMU and other like folks in the black community. And they were very, very cool to me. And I got to, that just blew my mind. So I could have never planned for that, you know, but I followed this woman to Tallahassee, Florida, you know, and get these opportunities like that, you know, and getting to play with, I ended up playing something with the symphony there and playing gigs around town. And after 2 years, I was like, okay, I think I've done everything that I can possibly do in this town. It's time to go, you know, and came up to Syracuse. We've been here since 2001 and doors continue to open. And it's weird because I would never, ever in a million years have said, I'm going to live in Syracuse. You know, because I grew up down south and was always like, I should be back south, you know, but this is where we've been and this is where we were supposed to be.
So, did you find that when you were in Tallahassee, did you, because I think this will be helpful for our listeners too, like, were you proactive? Were you really reaching out to, you know, to find these gigs and like the Urban Bush Woman dance troupe and stuff like that? Or were people coming to you? Like, how did that work?
Yeah, great question. So at that time, I guess we were able to set up because, let's see, we were engaged and I was doing my second year, my last year, my master's, and my wife was, we were engaged at that time. She was already in Tallahassee. So she was down, we were apart, and she kind of helped set some things up since she was already there and said, hey, you know, we're getting married and my husband's going to come and he's a percussionist. And, you know, they had an opportunity to teach a Brazilian ensemble. And then she talked to, I guess it was one of her, yeah, it was one of the people she was in school with, and they had, you know, we guess had met when I went down there, and they said, hey, you know, we have a steel band. You do that? And I said, yeah, I've been learning steel band at school. I could teach that. And she said, well, our person's leaving. Could you do that? Yeah. So was able to get into that. And then from there, I guess before because the Urban Bush Women Camp was the very first summer we were there, that was like really the first gig I had. And I guess we kind of found out about that ahead of time, but it was good actually that my wife was already there, or, you know, ahead to kind of help prep the way. And then when I got there, just kept meeting more people, and I ended up auditioning for a small like Latin jazz group. And then when I was there, I auditioned to sub with the symphony, and then ended up through doing that. So you asked if I was proactive. Definitely. And you gotta hustle. You gotta constantly hustle. I'm, you know, still working on stuff, still reaching out to people, and you know, I've been here long enough where I get good calls coming in, but I'm still trying to meet new people and that kind of stuff. So yeah, you gotta be proactive. You can't just be sitting there waiting for it, especially when you're new in a spot. You gotta be meeting people and trying to make things happen. And I was definitely proactive.
Mm-hmm. And it's great too, because it sounds like you were like, you know, when opportunities came your way, you were like, yes, and, you know, like, do you do steel drums? Yes. You know, like,
exactly.
Yeah, did them in school. Like, I'm going to do it. I may not be the best, but I, you know, I know enough about it to give it a try. And I think that's really important too. Yeah, that's great.
Then, I'm just thinking of other ways that opened up. Like, because I ended up doing the steel band, it opened up this after school program that had a steel band. They said, hey, we need a teacher. We got this after school program. And it was for kids, you know, near Tallahassee in a much poorer section. I was like, yeah, this is great. I live right by there. And so it's, you know, the act of going out and doing well, just hopefully and usually, you know, will open up other doors. You know, when you're on time and you're prepared and you treat people nice. Mm-hmm. Generally, good things keep following, you know?
Yeah, that's great. So tell us all about Syracuse. Tell us how what that scene is like and your work there and everything else.
Yeah, so like I said, we've been in Syracuse since 2001. And the first years I was here, the first thing, my wife had gotten like a two-year appointment to come in to teach music education. So she was then, you know, was full-time teaching, and for me it was another thing where okay, I'm starting over, and they at least were able to get me to do a Brazilian ensemble with her to teach together at Syracuse University. So that was the first thing we did together, which we had cut our teeth doing at Florida State for 2 years, running their Brazilian ensemble there. So we really had that experience, and she being a crafty woman that she is, worked it into her contract when she said yes, like, okay, if I say yes, then you also need to hire my husband. So
nice.
She was very proactive about that, and it benefited the school, because then they gained a group that they never had before. So it started with that, and then I was like hitting the pavement out, trying to find where I could teach, and ended up teaching at a couple different music schools or music stores. And so just teaching privately, and kind of did that for a couple years. But the second year we were here, got the opportunity to then teach the drum line at Syracuse University, the drum section for the marching band. So I grew up in high school, drum line and marching band. I did it in college at Kentucky, and I marched drum corps with the Cavaliers Drum and Bugle Corps, and ended up teaching and overlapping there as well. So I had a lot of experience with that. So started that and did that, ended up doing that for 10 years.
Oh, wow. That's great.
At SU. And then I guess it was about year three or four or five that we were here. There was a guy who had been teaching drum set lessons, and he really was teaching at a bunch of different places, and was kind of going all over the place and couldn't do it anymore, and said, hey, you know, I'm stepping down. They're looking for a drum set teacher. And they talked to him and said, hey, could you do this? He said, yeah. So I started teaching drum set there, and I guess I've been doing that since about 2006, something like that. So that started that on that path while we're still doing Brazilian ensemble. And somebody got, the percussion teacher got sick, ended up filling in and doing his percussion methods course and teaching percussion ensemble, like classical percussion ensemble. And did that for a couple semesters filling in. So it's just kind of more, like I said, more doors just kept opening. And all the while I'm playing, getting the gig, played with a local Latin pop band, and we were gigging all over the place. And then at that time, I was really playing a lot of pop percussion setups, congas, timbales, bongo, and started getting calls to play out of the casino. I got a chance to play with people like Aretha Franklin.
Oh, my God.
I've done seven shows with her as she's come through. And they keep, so from the first time, then they kept, she would come back and they would hire me again, thankfully, and got to play with, you know, Peter Cetera from Chicago and these folks that would just have shows coming through, and they needed to hire a band out, and there was this crew of guys in and around Syracuse, some great players. And when shows come through, they, you know, get hired out to do that stuff. So that's really cool work. And so I was doing tons of, you know, getting to play more Latin percussion stuff, even though I was the gringo. Nobody up here, you know, really knew that stuff. And there was a couple people, but yeah, so I've always been part-time at Syracuse University. I'm still part-time, and what I've done in the part-time has varied quite a bit from year to year. And all the while, I'm still doing gigs, playing with all different kinds of groups, jazz groups, playing drum set or hand percussion. And then, you know, within the last 6-7 years, got into the theater scene here at Syracuse Stage, and really love getting to play for the different theater productions, the big productions they do here in Syracuse. So it's changed, and I do a lot more drum set playing now than hand percussion. I do some hand percussion, but it's really, most of my calls now are coming in as a drum set player, which I've always done, but being a percussionist, there's just so many instruments that you can't even try to play them all well, but I kind of had my stock of things that I could do pretty well, and then just have been working on them and getting gigs with people. So I can't complain one bit. I'm getting to teach, you know, great stuff and getting really good gigs and have a family. So if I ever complain, you should just smack me upside the head.
Well, again, I mean, Josh, it's so cool. And I kind of want you to expand on this a little bit. But, you know, again, you go from Florida to New York, Syracuse, you got to start over. And, you know, yes, your wife, you know, helped you get an in at Syracuse, but you kind of could have just rested on your laurels. You know what I mean? It's like, you could have just coasted, but instead, you know, it sounds like you, again, like you said, you hit the ground running, you kind of hit the pavement, and it sounds like, and maybe you can expand on this, but you really started kind of building relationships with the local music scene. Yeah.
100%. You know, you got to go out, you know, as a musician, you want to get gigs. You got to go out, you got to meet people. People got to know that you're there. So I would go out, you know, to some clubs and would, you know, like I said, went to the music stores to inquire if they needed a teacher. Definitely got out there and made my presence known. And actually, I guess it was by my third year, I ended up just going into the studio and recording a bunch of beats that just to become my business card to give people. I didn't, wasn't even trying to sell it. I just made this at the time. This was the early aughts, probably 2003. Yeah, 2003. And just recorded a CD on my home computer with a CDR. You know, we used to burn discs, which is, you know, nobody does that anymore. But that became my business card. So I guess it took me about 2 years to get to that. Yeah, it was 2 years since we've been here that I did that. And that opened a lot of doors because it was like, hey, I'm Josh. This is me. And I would just hand people a CD. I said, here's different beats. You know, it's me playing Afro-Cuban stuff, playing Brazilian stuff, playing all the, basically everything that I knew how to play and I could put into a beat. Mm-hmm. That's what I recorded and was handing people. Mm. And that opened up a ton of doors because people were like, what is this? Nobody's doing this. And I hadn't really heard of anybody doing it. Is having a business, you know, handing CDs like that, but it's just like, well, this is how I'm going to get my name out. And there was 2 weeks where my wife was out of town with our youngest son. He was just a baby. And I had 2 weeks that she was back in Brazil where she's from. And that's when I did it. It was called the Cat's Away Sessions. Cat was away, and I went in for about 5 days. I hauled all my gear because I have tons of percussion. And hauled it all into the studio and just recorded everything that I could. And that's kind of what I'm still doing now with recording. You know, I was working on some stuff this morning and I'm just making beats, you know, sitting on the drum set, or then I'll do a MIDI and just make hopefully beats that have some sort of energy to them that people make you kind of want to bounce a little bit, and then add weird sounds to them.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's great.
I'll send you some of that set later. But,
yeah. I'd love to hear it. I think the other thing is too, that again, I love this because you're kind of defying the whole insistence that to be a professional musician, you have to live in New York City. You have to live in Los Angeles. It's like you get to be the kind of big fish in a smaller pond in Syracuse. And so when these big players come rolling in, like Aretha Franklin or Peter Cetera, like, you're the guy. Like, how cool is that?
Right. It's true. It's true. And I never, like I said, if I had never fell in love and, you know, that whole thing, I would have never been like, yeah, let's go to Syracuse. This is where I need to be. You know, never. Yeah. And it's been good like that. But I, like I said, I was talking to somebody the other day, I never had that aspiration to go to those spots. In fact, I'd only been to New York City once. When I was in drum corps, we toured coast to coast, and we would get, you know, on Greyhound buses, and we would stop in places. We got to stop in L.A., we got to stop in New York City, and New York City just intimidated me to death. I was like, no way am I thinking I'm just going to come into this spot, you know. And it ended up being many years later that I got to play there finally, but I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready at all, and I didn't have those aspirations. But Syracuse is, you know, as you're kind of asking about the scene, it's much smaller. I mean, you can't even, it's not even comparable to New York. New York is like a different universe. But occasionally people jump out of the universe and come up this way. So it's probably like 150,000 people with the surrounding neighborhoods. Like if you saw on the news about the kid who won't leave his parents' house.
Yeah.
That's in Syracuse. Right. That's here.
That's awesome.
So, you know, it's a very blue collar town, but there's a good, the university, I guess, is probably now the biggest employer after Carrier kind of went under with the Carrier Air Conditioning. Used to be one of the big employers, but they went out. So it's a tough place, you know, for some people to live. Mm-hmm. And it's very cold, but there's, the summers now are beautiful. And when everything finally gets to start growing, it happens really, really fast. For your listeners, if they're gardeners, we are zone 5A. If you have a garden, it's tough. It's a very short season to grow things up here, but it can be done. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, it's a good community of, there's some really fantastic musicians up here. But it's not, I mean, like I said, I don't even try to compare it just to bigger cities, mainly just from just population, just starting with the, like, how many people are there? You know, if you go down the road, you go to Rochester, they have a whole other pool of musicians, fantastic musicians. Of course, they got Eastman there. But if the town is almost twice, probably one and a half times, almost twice the size of Syracuse, and then Buffalo's, they got a whole other thing. Mm-hmm. So this, like you said, yeah, I guess I kind of have become a big fish in a smaller pond. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think that that's really important because, you know, I interviewed a guy originally from Boston, Adam Lewis, and he was considering going to Emerson, right? Which, you know, Emerson's like, that's where you go if you want to, you know, be big in music or acting or whatever. And instead, he chose a really small school up in New Hampshire, and he got to be, you know, the big fish. And he basically started a record label out of his dorm room and ended up running his College Station. And he was saying, like, I don't think I would have had those opportunities had I gone to Emerson. You know, they wouldn't, he 100%. Said they wouldn't even let you touch the equipment until like your sophomore, junior year at Emerson. So it's like, I think that's the thing. I think for people, listeners, you know, that are like, oh, I have to go to like the biggest, the best, you know, Ground Zero, you know, Los Angeles, New York City. It's like, no, actually, there's a lot of advantages to going for the lesser known or the places that may seem, you know, oh, this is just like podunk small. It's like, yeah, but you get to be, you know, the big man on campus, you know?
Yeah. My teacher at Kentucky, Jim Campbell, we had talked about this years ago because he, one of his first teaching jobs was like, I think it was out in like South Dakota or something. Like he was out there, Montana, I think it was out in Montana. And his motto was like, if I can do it out here in wherever Montana, then I can do it wherever you want me to do it. You know what I'm saying? Like if I can find gigs and find work out here, then I can find it anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And you could certainly, you could flip it around the other way and see it from, but I was like, yeah, I see what you're saying. And at Kentucky, it was kind of like that too. I was one of the first out-of-state people, or some of the first out-of-state people to go to school there, and, you know, was the first Texas guy to go there. Now there's been a bunch of Texas guys go to Kentucky. which is fantastic. And the program is like, it's out of control. Amazing. But it was, I was bringing a different thing then. There was guys coming in from Chicago, which were bringing in their kind of thing. Having that was kind of a little bit of the same being it was a smaller program. I had looked at University of North Texas, which is a fantastic school, but they have literally, I think until today, are like over 100 percussion majors.
Wow. Yeah.
And then Kentucky was like, at the time, I think we had maybe 12 to 15.
Mm-hmm.
So the same kind of thing. It was just a much smaller environment. And for some people, we need that. You know, you need more time to be in a fertile place where you can grow. Mm-hmm. Not in a place where you're trying to grow and people are beating down on you. Mm-hmm. But it's everybody's path is different. And it's how do you figure that out? You gotta do a lot of praying. You got to do a lot of meditating. You got to ask a lot of questions and figure out what is right for you, both educationally and financially. Because, of course, the cost of stuff is that's a whole other conversation. But it's really out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
So you got to weigh all those things for your younger listeners who are thinking about going to school. You got to weigh all those things and figure out, okay, what's best for you, you know, and who are you really listening to in terms of advice, you know, because everybody's got an opinion. So who do you really trust to listen to? Like, okay, yeah, this person's really speaking truth, you know? So that's mm-hmm. important to weigh as you're looking ahead. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. And then I was just going to ask you last question, because I kind of found you through career services at Syracuse. I know you were doing that for a while. What is the landscape like for students that are graduating out of music school these days? Like what sort of career advice or direction do you kind of give to these students?
Right. So we have a variety of students here at Syracuse University. So we have students that are studying music education, music industry. We now have sound recording technology students who haven't had a graduating class yet. I guess they're soon, and then there's a graduate component of that as well. So the music ed students have a track that tends to almost all of them end up getting jobs because there's thankfully growth around the country needing music teachers. Mainly if you're willing to move. You know, Syracuse, not necessarily around here. Occasionally there's a few that open up, but this is not a growing market like Texas or Las Vegas, you know, spots in California that just keep growing and more people moving there. So in music education, they definitely have a really good placement in terms of getting jobs. I don't know what the numbers are, but they were pretty high. Music industry students definitely have a structure to them because they're going out and getting jobs being managers. Some still are working at labels. We just had a really cool panel of 8 different women graduates from the music industry program who were doing mastering, a couple working at labels, a couple doing event, different things around music. And so it's pretty varied. It's pretty
mm-hmm.
varied.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of the students do performance, but not as much.
Interesting.
I generally don't recommend somebody get a performance degree anyway. It's like, well, my attitude even back 25 years ago was, if I get an education degree, that's opening up these other places to be able to teach, and I can still play, and you know, I still performed a bunch, so it was mm-hmm. really good. You know, so we have some performance students, but not many. And then we have some composition students, but even that has gone down. I'm happy to say that we started teaching jazz and commercial music students a couple years ago in a parallel track with the classical students. So now, for me especially, now I have drum set students. So they're getting, the two guys I have are doing music industry as their degree, but their mm-hmm. primary instrument is drum set. And that's been really cool. And I think that those guys are going to be really well prepared to get out when they graduate to do all kinds of stuff, to gig, to book gigs, to work for somebody else, to be in the studio and record stuff. So those guys especially I'm excited about. So we still have classical percussionists, but we have my own guys now, our own students. Let's see. So like I said, with music industry, they have a pretty good path, and they've I don't know what the numbers are because we like I haven't done the career stuff in a bit. So I couldn't tell you what current numbers and that kind of stuff, but we've got students getting out there and getting good jobs. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. And that's interesting too about, you know, performance, that it's kind of gone down. And I think there is that kind of debate, like, do you really need to go get a degree in performance to be a professional musician? And it seems like, no, you really, it's, some people choose to, but it's not a, you know, it's not a prereq.
No, I don't think it's a prereq. I mean, it depends what you want to do. It's tough. You know, like, so we're not, we have some students, I guess, that would go on to do orchestras, but we're not a conservatory. And mm-hmm. I went to a conservatory. That's a different model, right? Classical right. music, you know, was always conservatory to get students to play in an orchestra, which is mm-hmm. fantastic. But unfortunately, we just don't have many full-time orchestras left. And there's so many people vying for those jobs.
Right.
It's tough. I think the stats, it's like easier to become a congressman than to get a job in an orchestra, you know, it's tough. So, yeah. But if somebody's like, that's what I want to do, and you can't stop me, then go for it. You know, performance degree is the way to go. If that's it, if you're just completely of one mind that that's it, then go for that. But there's a lot, I mean, every musician that I know, even the ones that are working in the studios around here, they're all doing different stuff. Like, they're not just doing just teaching, or they're not just gigging. They're teaching and gigging and recording and writing for people and hustling whatever else they can hustle. Everybody's, you know, they use that term, the portfolio musician. Everybody's doing a little bit of this, a little bit of that to put bread on the table and be artistic and creative, you know, mm-hmm. and make money at the same time. So that's always what I talk to students about is, and when I do career counseling, is considering your options. You know, you got to see, you know, you were talking about bigger cities versus small cities. Is there a place that specific market in mind? And we have students from all over the place and international students as well. So with my students from China, I can't really help them too much because I don't know those markets there, but I know them better here domestically. And you got to, wherever it is, if you're going wherever in the world, you got to do your homework. You got to check it out. Who's there? Who's doing what I want to do? Mm. And you figure out not to take their gigs, but to start, okay, they've got this network. How can I do that too? How can I be work together in this?
That's fantastic. And just really, really good points about, you know, just diversify. Like, you don't have to put yourself in one particular channel, or, you know, this is, you know, this only this trajectory, like, I'm only going to play for an orchestra. It's like, you know, like you're saying with percussion, like, you're gigging all over the place. You're gigging for Aretha Franklin. You're gigging for, you know, Brazilian, that's what's so cool.
Well, and for me, it's just because I loved all these different kinds of music. And mm-hmm. certainly you should play music you love and play music you hate too, because sometimes the music you hate pays a lot better.
Yeah.
But for me personally, I just love, like I said, for me, I like playing with good musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And that's if I'm playing in a salsa band, if I'm playing in a jazz band, if I'm playing in an orchestra, if I'm in the studio, I don't want to be playing with the leakers. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to play with the people who know what's up. And I've been like that since I was a kid, which it kind of ended up being, I want to play with the older players and I could mm-hmm. generally hang with them. So I don't really care how old you are. You just better bring it and be good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's part of it too, is just, going for excellence. But in terms of the different styles, those opportunities opened up, I think, because I just had a genuine love for these different styles of music and was, like we talked about earlier, was willing to say yes. Mm-hmm. I can probably count on probably two hands now the times that I've said no. And especially in my 20s and in my 30s, I said no maybe once in that 20 years. Now in my 40s, I'm saying no a little bit more just because I'm a little bit older, and I'm, you know, I could do it. But, do you know who the comedian Joan Rivers was?
Yeah, of course.
She had a show on E, right? And she mm-hmm. just was like super foul mouth and great. She would say whatever she wanted, and she was hilarious. I got a call. This was probably 2006 from the casino. guy who was booking the casino, and he said, "Hey, Joan Rivers is coming through, but she needs somebody to play vibraphone on one of the piece on one of her shows." And that would require, you know, comping, you know, being in a band with a pianist, and then you got to play chords, you got to solo. And I was probably could have done it, but I was didn't feel confident enough and was worried that she would have humiliated me on stage that I turned it down.
Oh, wow.
And I was glad that I did, because I wouldn't want to go in there and she would have felt it out. And but that was one of the few times that I said no. And I was glad that I did, because I don't think I would have done well on that gig. But pretty much everything else, I said, yeah, I can do that. And if I wasn't sure how to do it, I figured out how to do it as best as I could, and then got to the rehearsal and did it, and then tried to make it better and just keep making it better.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I think that was a smart move. I don't think you'd want to become, you know, Joan Rivers material for her show.
Right. Right. So sometimes you say no, but
yeah, I think that one's okay. I'll give you that one.
Okay, good.
So Josh, thank you so much. This has been really, really good. And I think you definitely shed a lot of light and a lot of great information for our listeners. Is there any way for people to find out about your gigs, or, you know, what you're doing in the studio, that kind of thing?
Yeah, probably the best way is joshdecaney.com is my website. I keep all my gigs up there, and there's videos and audio and different recordings that I've done. And then Instagram is DecaneyDrumsUSA.
Cool. That's so great. Well, thanks again. And, you know, have fun gardening for the next, 2 months?
We keep it going up here. I can still get collard greens till about the end of October.
Nice. Well done. Well, thanks again, Josh.
All right. Thank you very much.
Really great interview. Thanks again to Josh so much. If you are looking to get into music education, if you're looking to pursue a career as a professional musician or percussionist, or you're looking for gardening tips, this interview has it all. So again, thanks to Josh. And again, his website is joshdecaney.com. So be sure to check him out there and follow him on Instagram and all that good stuff. So you guys, thus ends another wonderful episode of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? Again, we are on all the streaming platforms. Our website is musicjobspodcast.com. That's musicjobs.com. I am your host, L. Ariel. I am also on the social media at L-A-R-I-E-L Music. I have an EP coming out with this incredible collaboration with recording producer and songwriter Sound Control. And the EP is called Diatribe, and it is dropping at the end of this week, June 8th. Oh my goodness, I better get everything together. But stay tuned, follow me on social media, or go to my website, lariel music.com. That's lariel music.com. Thank you so much again, so much for your continued support. If you are listening to our little podcast on the streaming platforms, if you can please give us some stars, show us some love. We would love to get higher up in the rankings so more and more people can find out about us and help them with their music careers. So please spread the word. And again, I hope everyone has an incredible, productive, wonderful week. Take good care, and remember to keep on hustling, pursue that dream, and don't give up.